a podcast about Google Cloud. Google.
Yeah.
Google.
And accountancy.
Welcome to GCP Bytes, episode number 10 for Friday, the 14th of February, 2025. GCP Bytes is a podcast where we discuss Google Cloud and tech. And I'm your host, Stephen Bancroft. On today's show, there are stacks of people moving around. There are GDG events aplenty. Google seems to be the fastest growing cloud. Plus, Gemini has received a serious upgrade. Find out in the AI wars. But before we get to any of that, I'd like to introduce the co-host of the show, Dave Wall. How are you, Dave?
I'm good, mate. A little bit delirious this morning.
Delirious. And our very own GDE, Ian Brown. How are you, mate?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Yeah, it's all right. Hanging in there. Tech adventures this week. We'll just get straight to it.
Let's not beat around the bush.
I mentioned that I got this haul of equipment, this old studio that sold out their all their gear. So I got all of that. And in there were a couple of MOTU cards. And I think I showed you guys. Yeah, these things, right? This makes great podcast content because it's all visual.
Yeah.
Now, for our viewers our listeners, Banky's holding up a black box.
A black box. Yeah. But on the back of this black box, there is numerous audio plugs and doohickeys.
And an RCA. Right? Oh, those look like old school ports.
Yeah, we've got some gear on there. Yeah. Now,
some SCSI.
The thing is, no, there's no SCSI.
That's a parallel.
It's TDIF, by the way. I could explain it.
You're
one day.
A TDIF.
This is made by a company called MOTU, and they have a series of cards. They had a MOTU PCI card, a PCI-X card, and then almost 10 years ago now, they released a PCI-E card. And they have what looks like a FireWire cable, but it's not FireWire. They call it audio wire, and that cable comes from that card and plugs into the back of this, and this just becomes your interface, right? Now, this is what I wanted, right? So I got these. I got four of these, pretty extra, even if you were to buy them secondhand. And what I had to get was I took a kind of took a punt and bought the PCIe card to go into Windows, into my Windows machine.
Sure.
Now, the thing is, I wasn't actually sure if that was going to work straight off the bat because not a lot of people use this system on Windows, from what I gather. It tends to be a Mac thing. And what I've gathered is that these no longer work on Mac, right? And that's why I was able to get it so cheaply and why they chucked all their stuff out, because it's all Mac stuff that no longer works.
Right, so they could run it on those old G5 Power Macs. That's what they were for.
But here we are, for $700, I bought the internal DSP card. I can plug them all in. Works perfectly on Windows. I now have like umpteen number of audio IOs on my machine. And, $800 or something, to build a system like that, thousands.
So the question then is, are we using it right now?
No, we are not. So see all this other fancy gear that you can see around in my studio?
Yeah. Yep.
All of the audio from that would plug into these cards.
Right, yeah, so we've got the whole band in there.
You can feed everything in, right, and then you can work with it all in real time.
Make yourself a sample track,
yeah. So it's like a big tape machine, right? So everything would feed in, and then, you remember that, you've got the big tape machines, but the computer becomes a tape machine effectively. Hmm. And not only that, with the DSP, you can manipulate and work on everything in real time.
So, very nice.
Yeah, got that going for me. Yeah, so cool. I was really happy it all worked. MOTU make various other types of these IO expansion boards. And you can configure them up however you like. I can plug four of them in, and I can have up to 20, 24, 96 in and 96 out. which is a significant upgrade from my current 16 in and 16.
Yeah, you can need a bigger studio if you're getting the whole orchestra in there.
Yeah. So if I want to buy any more outboard gear, I'm able to do it. Now I'm going to muck around with this analog summing thing. I've got a bit of a brainwave I'm going to be mucking around with. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. I might make a video on it too. That's been my tech adventure.
That's a good one.
Successful one. Yeah.
Very good. I don't really have a tech adventure. We've been in the training mode with our dog. So obviously Bonnie, our old dingo dog, died late last year, and we got ourselves a new dog who's a Roddy Cross something.
No, he's a beast.
He's a monster of a dog. Yeah. But he loves us to bits. He's not aggressive with us. He's aggressive with anybody who walks in the door that isn't us. So we sort of saw this right from the get-go. He'd settled in, 3 or 4 days had gone past, and we got a carpenter come in to do some repair work on our kitchen. And he launched himself at the security screen and scared the bejesus out of this poor bloke. And it was like, oh, okay, that's a bit odd. But once we'd got him upstairs, he was fine. And then my brother-in-law came just after Christmas, and his four kids, like little tiny kid right up to teenager, they all walked in, they were fine. And then Huxley bit my brother-in-law. And then,
yeah, dog's going to do that.
Yeah, and then a friend of ours came over the other day, and she's been over a half a dozen times before. Huxley's never bothered her, like never bothered with her at all. It's like, oh, yeah, no, you're cool. She went and sat down on the couch upstairs. He went over, sniffed her, and then bit her.
Mm.
And so now we're in training mode, and we're like trying to teach him that like people that get invited in the house are fine. But I can tell you now that's a very hard habit to break.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Our German Shepherd is basically a T-Rex at the moment. Mm. He'll play, bite, and get really excited, and bite hands. Yeah.
Yeah, Huxley doesn't, I don't know that he's actually playing, because the hackles come up and the tail goes out. He's fully right. Serious, and you know, he's 47 kilos. He's a big dog, and he tends to make a mess of you if he bites you.
Yeah, right.
That's a difficult one.
Yep. So we've got the dog whisperer over, sort of every few weeks to help us out and trying to get him under control so that he doesn't bite anyone else. Because biting intruders is fine. Biting my friends, not so much.
So much, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I don't really have anything other than I'm starting to have, okay, we're looking at getting a factory space. We're sort of expanding out.
Right.
So we're doing that. So it's a
way. Last time we talked about this, you said no way.
Well, yeah, now it's very way. So it's like sorting out things with accountants and all that kind of stuff now. So it's a whole big boring thing. But the kind of interesting thing is like, oh, wait a minute. If I have an actual real premises that's not like my workshop, then I get to start building my own infrastructure. It's like, what do I want my network and server infrastructure to look
here
like?
We go.
I get to move outside of like the home space. Mm-hmm, so I'm all excited about that. I'm like, oh, okay, how am I going to do security? Probably, right? Like, that's probably where it's going to end up. It's probably just going to be unify the whole stack. And now they've just announced a whole bunch of IoT stuff coming through too. So.
Yeah. Hey, if you need it, mate, I know this this great bloke who makes rack mounts for all that gear.
No, I don't hear it. He's not any good.
And I want to see the photos of the pristine rack with the perfectly organized cables when it's all done.
Yeah, I've already sort of went through that with my business partner, and they're like, okay, well, yeah, maybe we need to have the server rack probably needs to be like in a visible area, and it needs to be attractive at all times so we can use it in marketing stuff. So that's probably like a good way to think about it, as opposed to, you know, what every server rack ends up like. Yep. Like once people have been in and out of it for a few times.
It's like, a showpiece. Like if people come to the factory as well, it can be, you know.
Yeah, it needs to be pretty. So
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's a few hours of work.
Yeah. But anyway, that's a future thing that'll be this year sometime.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, I look forward to hearing the stories about that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, before we get on with the community news, ex-Googler engineer faces US charges. He stole AI secrets. Yeah, Lin Will Ding of stealing artificial intelligence trade secrets to benefit two Chinese companies he was secretly working for.
Yeah,
wonder how much of this made it to DeepSeek.
Yeah, well, who knows?
Who knows?
But,
yeah,
but the thing here is, it looks like he's getting charged with both espionage and trade secret charges.
Mm. Yeah, that's big boy jail time.
Yeah, yeah, yep. So espionage charges carries a maximum of 15-year prison term and a $5 million fine, US dollars, obviously. And while each trade secrets charge carries a maximum 10-year term and a $250,000 fine.
Cool.
So, you know, two charges of trade secrets and one of economic espionage, he's going to the big house for a little while.
He is.
Assuming he's guilty, of course.
Oh, assuming he's guilty, but some of the allegedly stolen chip blueprints were meant to give Google an edge over cloud computing rivals Amazon and Microsoft.
So if it's chip designs, it's probably talking about like the Trillium stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, potentially,
yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll follow this story. Yeah, he's in a lot of hot water.
Yeah, so apparently he uploaded, or it's alleged that he uploaded more than 1,000 confidential files by May 2023 and later circulated a PowerPoint presentation to employees of a China startup he founded, saying that country's policies encouraged development of a domestic AI industry.
Hmm. And what else did I read here? He'd been at Google for 3 years, is that right? And then, yeah, he was seduced by this other company to send the information over. Yeah. So, yeah, it happens.
Yep. It does indeed.
All right. We'll keep an eye on that story and see what the fate of that guy is. But let's get on with the community news. All right, Ian, let's hit us with it, Ian. There's GDG all over the place.
All right, there's four of them that I've got for the next couple of weeks. So GDG Melbourne's February coding night is on the 19th of Feb. So it's next Wednesday from 5:45 till 8. And it's at level 2, 452 Flinders Street, which I believe is actually the Mantle Group office. Yeah, it is. It's Mantle Group.
Yep.
In Melbourne, so that sounds like a good one. It's hosted by Katie and Susie Tran and all the GDG organisers down there. They're fantastic. Love catching up with those guys. So that's a good one to go and see. GDG Melbourne again has their February meetup. It's Wednesday the 26th of Feb from 6 p.m. Again, it's at the Mantle Group head office. They've got a couple of talks going on there, so if you're down in Melbourne, go along to that one. Next one I've got is GDG Hobart. We don't hear much from Hobart, but this is a pleasant little surprise. It's at the Centenary Building, and it's on February the 20th from 4:30 p.m. And it's how to land a job in the tech industry as a recent graduate. So jump along to that if you're a recent graduate and you need to learn how to get into the tech industry. And last but not least is GDG Brisbane's Cloud and AI Meetup. It's at the Launch Event Space in the Precinct on February the 28th from 6 p.m.
I feel like we're missing one other major one that should probably be in there, given that Next has been had its dates announced.
I got the email this morning that I've been invited to the early bird ticket sales. They want $1,000 US for a ticket to Next, and I'm like, nope. No, it's like $1,500 Australian, and then I've got to fly over there. No,
yeah, yeah. It's
not worth
that's
it.
That's a big deal.
Go and go and get a media pass. You know, this big podcast pushing behind you, man. Like, go in there, get backstage access.
Go with your Zoom recorder and get some get some meeting, get some interviews.
Yeah. Get some FaceTime with Thomas Kurian.
Yeah, well,
he's a hard man to get hold of.
I bet.
Kurian.
Yeah, so next April 9 to 11 in Mandalay Bay Conference Center in Las Vegas, where I think they've had it a couple of times before.
Yeah, they've had it a couple of times. They moved it out of San Fran.
Yeah. It's just if you I'll put a link in the show notes, but they've got a sort of a bit of a timeline there, a bit of a program schedule there. No, not too much details at this point, but yeah, it looks like there's going to be some cool stuff there.
So in like what, five four podcasts day. From now, like we should be covering stuff. There'll be announcements and things.
Next, yep.
I think so.
Yep.
And that's if they just don't rehash everything they've rehashed during the year, which is what they did at the previous one. All right, then, let's move on with the news items. And, of course, these days, the first thing we do with the news items is people movements. And this first one... And this first one's a bit of an interesting one. Google confirms voluntary exit program for Android, Chrome, and Pixel employees in America. The news comes as the US department is seeking to potentially force Google to divest in Chrome and Android. So I think there's some internal movements going on in relation to that. And maybe they're trying to preempt what needs to happen in relation to that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my read of it as well. I mean, a lot of big tech companies are using any excuse to be able to have reductions in force at the moment. It's sad that this is coming from what is effectively the devices division because, you know, there's quite a few gaps in devices, especially home. Please, Google, we really need new home devices.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, hopefully we'll see some movement there, but, you know, not with a reduction in staff.
That's right.
But, yeah, if they're thinking that they're going to have to divest, this does give them a bit of time to scale down.
Yeah, look, it all comes out of this decision from what this article reads. And it's not just the Android and Pixel and that. It's Android, Chrome OS, Chromebooks, Fitbit, Google One, Nest, Photos, and Pixel. So the whole lot of them. From what it sounds like, is Google's reacting to the U.S. Department of Justice trying to get them to sell off or close down those sections.
Let's just hope it doesn't affect the phones too much, right? Because I think Pixel is really on an upward projection, right? Like it's really a hot competitor for iPhone. I mean, you know, the latest Pixels are fantastic, and I don't know if they've ended the Pixel line. I honestly don't know what I'd do. Like,
yeah, probably have to go over to Galaxies or something.
Yeah, well, and that's it. So I think the biggest issue Google's got with the take up of the Pixel is that they have a reputation for killing tech off. And so people are like, well, I can buy a Galaxy phone and know that in 10 years' time, Samsung is still going to be supporting a Galaxy phone. They won't be in 10 years' time, but, you know, they'll get 3 or 4 years out of it before Samsung goes, meh, no, don't care anymore. Whereas Google, you know, oh, we're bringing out the Pixel Tab. Yeah, we're closing the Pixel Tab down.
They do that with all their products, right?
Yeah.
There's a website devoted to it, in fact.
That's right. So, and I think that's the biggest hindrance that Google's got in the take-up of their own tech is people are scared that they're going to spend $1,000 or $1,500 on a new device and Google's going to go next week or next year, they're going to go, yeah, we don't care about that anymore. We're closing it down.
Going to dump it, yeah.
Yep.
That's been their philosophy, right? Try it out in the market, see how it goes. If it doesn't, you know, if it doesn't go any well, after a couple of years, just shut it down. There's no point, you know, flogging a dead horse.
Thankfully, at least, like, you know, Pixels now, we are so many generations deep. They've seemed to have actually hit a cadence where we do get, you know, twice a year, you'll get the, you know, you'll get the 9 and then you get the 9A, which is a cut down version, and then the 10 will come out. Like, so kind of every 6 months, there's sort of a new thing coming.
Yeah,
every other device.
It's interesting though that they're looking at Android as well. So I understand the Department of Justice in the US has said that they have to divest Chrome because they have an unfair advantage or some other such nonsense that Microsoft quite clearly has as well with Edge. But you know, Chrome's bigger and better, and who wants to use Edge? but I understand the Chrome and Chromebooks and the likes, but I don't get the Google Photos and Android, because if you get the Android open source project, Chrome isn't on it. It's a Chromium browser, but it's not Google's Chrome with all Google's telemetry stuff in it. It's just Chromium. The Google Photos one, I mean, are they going to go after Apple and tell Apple that they need to close down iPhoto now? Because, you know, iPhoto is the same thing.
And that Google might photos. Be more just a, it just happens to be in that division and not necessarily like that is a particular thing that they're concerned about going.
Yeah, maybe. But I look at the like list of products that they're offering voluntary exit to, and it's Android. Okay. That's weird, but sure. Chrome OS and Chromebooks. Okay, that's all Chrome-based stuff. Fitbit, I don't know where that comes from. Google One, I mean
Google One's just a subscription.
That's right.
And
it's like that's the same as our Apple subscription that we've got in this house as well. Mm. Nest, that scares me a little bit because I like my Nest stuff. Google Photos and Pixel. So obviously, the Google Photos and Google One and Chrome and Android are all embedded in Pixel.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, so is just the same is true for the Apple ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
So sounds like a bit of hypocrisy.
Apple don't have a giant search engine that, you know, basically controls the internet. And I think that's that's the pain point, right?
They were spinning one up years ago. I heard this on the rumor mill that they were going to spin one up years ago to compete with Google, and then they dropped the idea.
Mm.
Maybe they realized that Google was just too big to compete with.
Yeah, maybe. You can always bing it.
Yeah, you can always bing it and get the wrong answer.
Anyway, let's move on. We'll see what comes of that, but definitely something happened here. Next one's a quick one. Walsh exits Google Cloud after 4 years for Next Adventure. So Nigel Walsh has left his role as the global head of insurance for Google Cloud. LinkedIn post on the 28th of January 2025 confirmed this. Walsh is announced he was departing the technology giant after 4 years. I didn't know there was a head of insurance, but
no.
After reading that, it actually makes sense that you need to have someone that looks after your insurance, I guess. So, yeah, he's moving on. And to finish off our people moves, we have Microsoft VP jumps to Google Cloud as new president to drive AI. Hayat Gallot, who runs Microsoft's go-to-market plan for its entire commercial segment, as well as managing Microsoft's more than 150 innovation centers, is leaving to become Google Cloud's new president for customer experience. She has held other positions at Microsoft as well over the years, including the corporate vice president of modern work and security, the general manager of chief of staff for Microsoft Global Sales and Marketing, and the general manager for growth of Microsoft Office. Been there 16 years, would have been a big call to jump across to Google, and I reckon it was a rather large carrot as well, I'd imagine.
Yeah, more than likely.
Big old bag of carrots.
Oh, yeah.
Truckload of them. Hey, did you see the groups that she's going to be in charge of? So the Google Cloud business groups, including strategic customer experiences, strategic accounts, global solutions and industries, global customer engineering, global partner ecosystem and channels, and Google Cloud consulting and learning services are all coming under her banner.
That's a huge swath.
It's a monstrous swath of... And she's going to report directly to Matt Renner, who's the president of Global Revenue.
Huh. Okay, so consultants will come under her then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine. Yeah, okay. All right. Well, best of luck and welcome aboard, Hayat Gullet. Of course, we only do this so I can tag them in my LinkedIn post. All right. Let's move on then. Finance. We've got some finance stories here now. Some numbers have been released. AWS versus Microsoft versus Google cloud earning Q4 2024 face off. In head-to-head, Google Cloud remains the fastest-growing cloud company on the planet. That's what we like to hear.
Yeah, AWS remains the global market leader for shares or for share of the cloud, although its share has dipped, and Microsoft's cloud business has the highest operating income out of all three, although Google showed some impressive operational growth. So there's some pretty cool numbers in this. I need to call out though that Microsoft actually doesn't make its Azure specific revenue figures public.
No,
it mixes it in with a whole heap of other stuff that makes it look better. So you know, take these numbers with a grain of salt.
It's all the Microsoft 365 stuff's in there too.
Yeah, and there's a whole heap of other stuff as well. So it's Azure sales included inside Microsoft's Intelligent Cloud Group, which also includes server products and other non-Azure cloud services. So it does not include productivity sales such as Office 365 or sales from PCs like Windows.
Okay, I thought they did have that in there.
Yeah, I think it did. It was either last year or the year before it did. But, you know. But their Q4 revenue and annual run rate... AWS revenue of $28.8 billion with a run rate of $115.2 billion. Microsoft revenue of $25.5 billion with a run rate of $102.
Only just behind AWS now.
Only just behind. And Google, revenue of $12 billion and a run rate of $48 billion. And that shows a year-on-year growth of AWS of 19%. Microsoft 19% and Google 30%.
Climbing up.
Double.
Yeah, yeah. Keep that going for a few more years and they'll be up around the 100 billion mark for sure. Yep,
that's it.
And one other takeaway from this article is that our assessment is that since ChatGPT was launched, GenAI has been responsible for at least half of the increase in cloud services revenues. Half of GenAI. That comes as no surprise, right?
No. Not at all. I did find it interesting, the operating incomes. So you have a look at Google's, was it $48 billion or something like that, that it was... its annual run rate was, and its operating income is $2.1 billion of that, whereas the other two are up around the $10 billion mark. So they're not five times as big, but their operating income is five times bigger.
Yes. No, I follow you now. But like, you remember, it was only, I don't know, what, 2-3 years ago where Google was still losing money on Google Cloud.
Oh, yeah.
So like now they're up. I think even this saying that at 2.1 billion, that's 142% more than their last one. So I think they're thrilled.
Oh, 100%. I would be.
And did we go into the market share? This is important figures as well. AWS 30%, Microsoft 21%, Google Cloud 12%.
So still plenty of room to grow.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, that's only 63% of the entire market, of the cloud market. So you've got to think that all of the other cloud providers that are out there, your Oracles, your IBMs, your Alibabas, all the rest of those, they're making up the other 37%.
Mm.
Now, who's number four on that list, I wonder? Like, who's the next biggest?
Cloud Wars might do an article on that. A list. I could do a list on that.
Could do a list. Tell you.
I know. IBM is the next biggest. AWS, Microsoft Azure, Google Cloud, IBM, Alibaba.
That's funny. I just did a search on who's the top 10 cloud providers, and I got an ad for Mantle Group.
Nice. All right. Speaking of other cloud providers, Google and Oracle are set to expand with 8 new regions. Google Cloud have announced a significant expansion of their regional presence, planning to introduce 8 new regions over the next 12 months to meet increasing customer demand. Along with that, Oracle has demonstrated solid growth with revenues reaching 54.9. And this is to do all with Oracle Database on Cloud. I think this is going to be a big part of this that comes along with it. They've introduced some great new features. We now have the general availability of cross-region disaster recovery for Oracle Autonomous Database Serverless. That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
which allows data replication across different Google Cloud regions. And this is obviously going to be baked in from day one in these new regions. That'd be the point of it.
I do like where they're putting the new locations, and they're expanding locations as well. So they're adding additional capacity to London, Frankfurt. Let's try this again. They're adding capacity to existing regions, London, Frankfurt, and Ashburn, and they're adding new locations in the US, Canada, Japan, India, and Brazil.
Didn't we report on the first Brazil data center going in?
Pretty sure we did.
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago now in the old incantation of this podcast. But so now we've got a new region in Brazil.
New regions in Iowa, Montreal, Toronto, Tokyo, Osaka, Mumbai, Delhi, and Sao Paulo, along with doubling data center capacity in London, Frankfurt, and Ashburn.
So all those poor people who are still running an Oracle database can at least do it on Google Cloud.
And they can...
And migrate to AlloyDB.
Yeah. And they can do it with cross-region disaster recovery for Oracle Autonomous Database Serverless. They can do it that way. Excellent. All right. So we move on with some security news.
Yes.
Couple of security-related newses. Ian, you threw this one here. Sophos closes $859 million acquisition of XDR specialist SecureWorks.
Yes.
Knee Dell SecureWorks.
Yeah, right. Knee Dell. Yeah, it was. So SecureWorks is obviously some sort of a seam saw software. And the last time I saw it, it didn't actually have a Google integration at all. Because, you know, nobody uses Google. That was the words of the SecureWorks consultant that I spoke to, which was just mind-blowing. But anyway...
Well, we just saw numbers that prove that, you know, at least...
that's it.
12% do.
Yep. So, look, it's Sophos has made a play for that, and they've closed that out. So they're going to keep on... Wendy Thomas for a short period of time, who's the current director of or CEO of SecureWorks. They're going to keep her on for a period of time and whilst they transition over. But the overall product will roughly stay the same. Sophos isn't looking to change the world when it comes to SecureWorks. It's looking to bring another product into its security fold.
Right, and sort of build out their XDR a bit more.
Sophos, weren't they a virus scanner in the early days?
Yeah. They got a whole stack. They're huge in the MSP space. They got like a pretty good MSP program, including all their firewalls and everything. They got, I think they do like wireless APs and stuff now as well.
Yeah,
I think they got a whole stack.
Yeah, so their next gen firewall suite has the Sophos. Well. The old UTM, the UTM 9, had the Sophos Reds, which were a remote Ethernet device. So it was essentially a really simple way of extending your network to a branch office from a data center. But to be perfectly honest, the Sophos UTM holds a very special place in my heart of something I will never, ever use again.
Yeah, I do remember, not to turn this into an ad for Sophos, but I remember looking into it and I thought there was something pretty cool in that because you had the whole stack of like the firewalls and you could have the software on the machines as well. If there was an issue detected on the machine, then it could be isolated off the network from the network side, not just on the device itself, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I used to run it like the UTM with the Reds and Sophos antivirus and malware detection, and their malware detection suite was actually really good because if it detected something that it thought was malware, whether it had a signature for it or not, it had this sort of intelligent processing before AI was a thing, and it used to block the process like right there and then. So you like if you did happen to get a new version of a crypto locker or something like that, it wouldn't last more than a second on a device. Sophos had just shut it down straight away, which was a bit of peace of mind. All you had to do then was just combat people putting tablets in freezers because they were too hot.
What?
Did you not that happen?
I feel like this is a different tech adventure.
we had someone come to us one day and said, you're going to need to replace my tablet. It's like, why? It's a brand new tablet. Oh, I got too hot, so I stuck it in the freezer. And now it won't turn on. I'm like... It's probably a reason why it doesn't turn on. Probably got a lot of water inside of it now. But you know. And then the question was, can we replace it under warranty? No. No, we can't.
You should have bought the Arctic edition.
The one with liquid cooling. This one had it too, just wasn't intentional.
That's right. All right, and the last one here before we get on to the AI wars, it is kind of AI wars related, but it's kind of security related as well. The Australian government bans DeepSeek on government devices.
Yeah, so I threw this one in as well. It was an interesting one that popped up. I was reading some posts on Twitter, now known as X.
I don't think we have to say that anymore.
No, I do, just to be facetious.
I think we just say X.
We don't talk about it.
But anyway, I was reading some tweets on there about how the US Department of Homeland Security is looking at banning, or National Intelligence looking at banning it on all of their devices, and then this article pops up that we are banning it on all of our government devices. So, yeah, the Department of Home Affairs has issued a mandatory direction for all government entities to prevent the use or installation of DeepSeek products, applications, and web services, and where found to remove all existing instances of DeepSeek products, applications, and web services from all Australian government systems and devices.
Mm.
They've said that DeepSeek poses an unacceptable risk.
Oh, yeah. The amount of data it would have access to is astronomical. And every there's a mandate, I think, in China that every company has to make available a system so the government can have access to their data.
Yeah,
if they request it. Yeah.
There's some sort of ruling over there where any company in China, the government can access any data held by that company. Whether it's I don't know the specifics of it, so I'm trying to remain as vague as I possibly can here.
Yeah, no, it's along those lines. Yeah,
it's along those lines.
Yeah. So yeah, we don't want that on there. But yeah, muck around with it on your own phone, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Taiwan's already banned it. If you don't mind giving away all your data, which we've kind of already done anyway. Taiwan's already banned it. I think did I read in here the US or, you know, Europe. The countries in Europe
has,
as well.
Taiwan has, and the US looks like it is as well.
Yeah. Yeah, this story did make the mainstream media, and I think that's where I heard that as well.
Mm.
All right, then. Let's get on with the last part of the show. Let's get on with the AI Wars.
AI Wars.
All right, first one out of the gate this week. US looking into whether DeepSeek use restricted AI chips. So we've got DeepSeek being banned. We've got AI secrets being stolen and given to China. And now we've got the US investigating DeepSeek using restricted AI chips. This truly is the information wars, right? This is
It literally is tech wars. So
it is literally tech wars. Yeah.
DeepSeek have said that they use the NVIDIA H800 chips. Now they may have been able to purchase them legally a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
and you would assume that, you know, they've just released their models into the ether, so. They've probably been working on this for a couple of years,
mm-hmm.
yep. at least. So it's potential that they could have actually bought these chips legally. But
right. So yep. they couldn't buy them now.
They can't buy them now. They also say they're using NVIDIA's less powerful H20 chips, which can still lawfully be sent to China. But they're looking at whether DeepSeek have got
H800s.
Yeah, the 800s yeah. shipped to them recently because they have been banned now. But the CEO of AI, of Anthropic, sorry, said earlier this week, it appears that a substantial fraction of DeepSeek's AI chip fleet consists of chips that haven't been banned but should be, chips that were shipped before they were banned, and some that seem very likely to have been smuggled.
Right.
Which is actually a thing that happens, apparently.
I've no doubt. No yeah. doubt.
Smuggling chips, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's like what once upon a time to? We used to do that with humans. Now we do it with yeah, computer chips.
Yeah. You're not smuggling firearms anymore. You're smuggling chips.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Humans and firearms. I mean,
it's just a different type of weapon.
Right. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been weaponized, hasn't it, when you think about it?
I mean, given, like, yeah, it's slightly different, but we saw this issue where, like, I think it was, like, Russia was trying to get its hands on washing machines because then it was ripping the chips out of the washing machines to use in weapon systems. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Nature finds a way.
Nature finds a way.
I don't know about nature. I mean, nature certainly finds a way to do stuff, but not steal information off each other.
It's a quote from a movie, Ian, yeah, in case you...
Yeah. Jurassic Park, dude.
Oh, I haven't seen Jurassic Park for years. I don't even remember the plot line of it.
Johnny and the Clonosaurus.
This is a strand of DNA. Yeah, all right. So nature does find a way, and if there are chips that are going to be used, they'll be smuggled. That's
they
for
will
sure.
Be. Yeah.
They will be smuggled. Yeah, interesting one. We'll keep an eye on that. But you know, it makes sense that if you know DeepSeek, they had a need, right? They had a need to come up with something more efficient and more quicker and more nimble. And if they had limited resources, then that's what was going to be derived, right? And if they've done it cheaper, faster, better on lesser hardware, well, that's good what's, you know, good on them. Yeah, yeah. That's what's caused the buzz.
Just showing how little hardware you actually need.
Yeah.
But it's – so the article does actually say in here that there is an organized AI chip smuggling ring that's been tracked out of countries like Malaysia and Singapore and the UAE.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be interesting – I will be watching with bated breath to see what the US does in retaliation to this because they've got some fairly strict export restrictions on this. And I wonder whether they're essentially going to shut down exports to those countries, whether directly or indirectly.
Right. If they can prove that there's illegal exports coming out of those countries.
Mm. Well, the article says it has been tracked.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because you also end up in situations where like truckloads of GPUs get stolen, right? Like it happens. It's not hard. You know, deliveries are coming in and out of certain factories. Like there are ways and means. And then so yeah, a pallet load or an entire truckload worth of what are now an illegal GPU, that's very attractive to organized crime. And then, an hour later, it's at a shipyard and off it goes.
It's out of the country. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Worth more than gold.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. All right. Moving on then. Speaking of AI and generating, Google unveils WeatherNext, new AI models for weather forecasts. This is interesting. WeatherNext, a new family of AI models that promises greater accuracy. And look, we all like a bit more accuracy in our weather forecasts, right? They never get it right. more accuracy and efficiency than traditional forecasting methods. So they've got two models here. We've got the WeatherNext Graph, which is a highly efficient model that provides single deterministic forecasts within a six-hour resolution. I mean, that's pretty amazing, really, up to a 10-day lead time. And it is ideal for applications that require fast and precise predictions. And then you've got the WeatherNext Gen, a probabilistic model that generates up to 50 possible weather scenarios within a 12-hour resolution and a 15-day lead time. This model is particularly useful for forecasting your extreme weather events like cyclones. Because up to now, they've just been using what they call the physics model, where they basically try to calculate what the weather's going to be and forecast it that way. But clearly, there's so much weather data that makes it relatively straightforward to train a model on all that data, and we end up with this now.
Well, that's what the Bureau's been doing for decades and decades and decades now. I did work experience at the Bureau of Meteorology when I was still in school, and back then they used to draw the charts by hand. It'd come out of a plotter. And you'd have to link up all the different barometric pressures with some nice curvy lines. But the computers back then, which weren't fast by any means of anyone's imagination, used to do this with the existing data and work on, rightio, we've seen this lead of temperatures and humidities in the last 10 years and this is what happened. And it's very much the same as what AI is doing now. It's just AI is doing it with far more accuracy and far quicker.
Yeah, a lot more data to deal with. That's assuming climate change doesn't come along and screw the pooch.
Well, at least it can adjust, right? It's more likely, more data. I mean, do you remember that weird period of time, though, that we had like right at the start of COVID when all the flights shut down and then weather forecasting like dropped into the toilet because a lot of the measures that they use were captured from planes?
Yeah.
Not only that, I think the weather pattern changed because we didn't have that exhaust, plane exhaust in that stratosphere layer, that really important layer. And we saw, the smog over cities in India, absolutely clear and like that had never been seen for like 40 years.
Yeah, that's right.
That changed weather patterns as well.
So what we're advocating for here is get rid of planes and cars and we'll have clean air.
We'll be all good. Yeah.
Sure.
Electric planes, they're coming. They're coming. Let's not go down that nuclear debate rabbit hole again.
No, we've got election season coming.
No, that's right. Yeah.
Promise the world and deliver nothing.
Yeah. God, we're not a political podcast, though.
Oh, we could be.
It might be fun. Hey,
you guys want to start another podcast?
Oh, God, no.
All right. So, look forward to more accurate weather forecasts in your Pixel, I guess. That's probably what it amounts to. And now, finally for this episode, we've got Gemini 2 receives a significant update, and I've been using this all week, Gemini 2 Flash, Flashlight, and Pro. If you go to Gemini now, you'll be using Gemini 2.0 Flash. And I think it's giving much better results, particularly if you put in a coding problem. I'm going to run this by you later, Ian, but bit of a tech adventure. I was trying to compile CMonkey, which is a spin of Firefox.
On that
G5 over there.
Yeah, right.
Because you can't get a browser for it because it's big Indian and it's a really old CPU architecture.
Yep.
So you got to compile your browser up. And there's clearly a C bug in there, and it just throws an error. So I took that snippet of output, stuck it in the Gemini, and it gave me a comprehensive response, and it gave me a solution. It gave me two possible solutions to it as well.
Yeah, right.
So I was quite surprised with that. So yeah, I need you to help me decode it though. So
okay.
We can probably go and fix it up, but really thrilled with it.
Oh, nice! Love it. Yeah, no, I was having a little wander through the stats at this, that it's got like the model performance based on like all these different capabilities, like general capability. And when you have a look at 1.5 Pro versus 2.0 Pro, just in general capability, the 2.0 is 79.1%. And the 1.5 Pro is 75.8. So it's got a 4% increase there. And that's sort of indicative across the board. It's sort of somewhere in that 2 to 6% better range. So I'm looking forward to giving it a wallop.
There is one benchmark there that is significantly higher. It's Faculty Simple QA. World Knowledge Faculty with no search enhanced, 24.9% in 1.5 Pro, 44.3% in 2.0 Pro.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Hidden Math one is also quite a way better. But then the Long Context one it's actually worse. So if you have a look at the Long Context MRCR, 1.5 Pro is 82.6 and 2.0 Pro is 74.7. So, you know, there's swings and roundabouts, but on the whole, for the most part, is somewhere between 2 and 6% better across the board.
Yep.
Some bits it goes well and above, and some bits it is a little bit worse.
Does it have a multimodal value there? Because I did read that it's better with multimodal.
Yeah, Gemini 2.0 Flash offers a comprehensive suite of features including native tool use, a 1 million token context window, and multimodal input. Currently supports text output with image and audio output capabilities, and the multimodal live API planned for general availability in the coming months. Gemini 2.0 Flash Lite is cost optimized for large-scale text output use cases.
Yeah, okay, and it's got some pricing there as well if you're using the API per million tokens, which, you know, probably not that much if you're only doing a handful of API calls.
Yeah, it's a little bit more expensive than 1.5, but realistically not that much worse.
So, yeah, go check that out. You can go use it now for free, of course, if you just Google the word, what is the URL? Gemini.google.com, and you can solve all your problems for you. Very good. Well, I think that's about it, guys. Another bumper show. I tell you what, always a pleasure to record the show with you guys. Don't forget, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music. Go to Apple Podcasts, write us a review. You can also go to YouTube, start the discussion there. Smash that like button while you're at it. You can contact the show, contact@gcpbytes.com.au, and find us on the web, www.gcpbytes.com.au. And don't forget, today's sponsor is Hivetech Solutions and Mantle Group. Anything else from you guys?
No, I'll let you get out of here.
Yeah.
Let's get out of here.
Time to go and do some work.
Yeah, I know. It's I was a lot of gas bagging earlier on, but it's been a fun show. All right, we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Speaking of flying places, I'm going to Okinawa in August.
Ooh, oh, nice.
To go and train with a couple of karate masters.
Ooh.
Do some serious karate.
I didn't know that you're into the karate.
Karate. You didn't know?
I didn't know.
Well, I'm back into it. I'd been into it for years, and I stopped for a little while, and then the kids got me back into it, or Ellie specifically.
Because you had to put them in their place.
Well, that's right.
They challenged you.
Settle down, kids, or I'm going to karate chop you.
That's right.